When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive and social media worlds. I'm your host, Sam, from that YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and alongside me, it is of course, Mr. Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
We're back.
We are back.
And we're in the studio.
This feels good, doesn't it?
This is better.
We had a brief hiatus. Some of you may have missed my main channel video where I went down to Gravelwood to catch up with Tony and explain why we sort of didn't upload any episodes for a good 3 or 4 weeks. And mainly because we were just trying to get our businesses back up and running, weren't we?
We were. What's hiatus mean?
Break.
Oh.
Yeah. I think an enforced break. I don't know what the difference between hiatus and break is, but sounds fancy,
because
right?
I didn't know what that meant, and probably quite a few people didn't, so I thought...
No, I think just you.
Oh.
Most other people went to school, Tony.
Fair.
But yes, we've both been getting things back up and running now that coronavirus restrictions or lockdown restrictions have been eased. We've been getting back to work. And as much as we love this podcast, Tony reminds me every single week that it makes us no money. So therefore, it hasn't been a priority. Well, and also, yes, if you want to help us, maybe, you know what? Maybe we should set up a Patreon for this podcast. You know what that is?
No.
I've been watching, there's a channel that I've fallen in love with during lockdown called Sailing Le Vagabond. Really cool, a young couple, Australian, with a kid, and they sail the world. And they are funded by their audience. So it's a patron, and you sign up, and a bit like with Drive the World, if you give £5 per episode, you get a mug. If you give £10 per episode, you get a mug and a poster.
Okay,
if you give £50, you can come on the show, whatever it might be. Maybe that's a good way. Okay, let us know below. This is a question for all of you. Would you be prepared? Would you like to get on board with a Patreon for Behind the Glass to support us?
Yeah, we don't want to be a beg or nothing because we enjoy doing this, but it's not even for us. It's just so we can step up what we're doing, essentially.
Well, that's exactly it. I think it gives us more motivation to make more episodes.
For sure.
More regularly, increase the production value and various elements. So yeah, if you're willing to support it, we might look into doing that. But for now, as you say, we just love it.
We do like it.
But we just, you know, whilst we had to get our business back up and running, it took a slight back seat.
Absolutely, yeah.
But we're now back.
We're here.
So if you're watching us on YouTube, make sure to hit subscribe and turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes, because I promise future episodes are coming. And if you're listening to us only, thank you so much for tuning in on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you might be listening. Tony, what's been happening? What's been happening? Since I came down and visited the dealership, has your week continued to be mental?
Yeah, we haven't stopped, mate. Like, honestly, it's not just me. It's the whole motor trade. The old motor industry is just, like, so busy. I can't remember the last time we was this busy. The thing is, it's all inflated because we've been so quiet for 3 months. It's obviously there's been a build up in demand. So, yeah, it's odd really how things go around, because I'm now paying as much or more money for cars than what I was in January or February than what and we can't get stock.
Like, that's the thing I keep hearing.
There's, like, honestly, mate, used car stock is so hard to find. Nice cars anyway.
Sure.
I mean, you buy whatever you like, but yeah, what fits your dealership? But everyone's having the same problem. So, which means used car prices will strengthen because there's no new cars, which is what I said 3 months ago. Thank you. I mean, I did say this, guys.
Hey, it's really helping inflate your ego, this situation.
No, this is my job. I mean, I know.
No, to be fair, you did call this. And it, you know, as you say, it's across the board. All the dealers that I've been speaking to or visiting over the last few weeks have been selling cars like hotcakes. I mean, you know, cars are flying out of the door, but people are struggling to replenish stock. And of course, the bigger question or the bigger issue, I suppose, is new cars, because there's still a big question mark over factories and when new cars might be able to get delivered. So everyone is kind of turning to used stock. So there is going to be a shift in the market in that sense, I suppose, until factories can start pumping out cars regularly again.
The problem we're going to have now, which is another prediction of mine.
Oh, here we go. We should have a little...
Do not touch them buttons.
I was so nearly going to push one of my sound effect buttons, but I haven't programmed the Tony's future predictions button yet.
No, because I think what's going to happen now, obviously the bad bit's still to come, if I'm honest. I think that probably used cars later on in the year, once all the dealers catch up, once all the manufacturers catch up again, they start pumping cars out. The problem we're going to have is obviously... there's no point hiding the fact we are or about to go into recession. So later on in the year, there's going to be some hard times coming.
Yeah.
The only thing is from what I've learned from other recessions is that normally used cars are okay. In the last recession, they strengthened up because people stopped buying new cars. And what people always think, when there's a recession, no one buys anything, no one buys houses. People have got to live somewhere, yeah. People have got to eat, and people still buy cars, mate. Yeah. Whether it's just what they buy.
Yeah.
It's not a thing that everything crashes. There's three real big industries in this country: the housing market, the car market, because they're your two biggest purchases in life, and you need them both, really. And then there's the want factor, which is why we have all these lovely cars, because there's two different markets. There's a need, which you go and buy a Nissan Qashqai or a Tiguan or something like that because you just need a car. And there's a want and an impulse, which is where you get sports and supercars and stuff. And that's what people go to work for. That doesn't go away. That will always be there.
But would it be right, let's say deep dark recessions, the values of those does diminish on the super sports car stuff because of people firstly trying to get out of them if they're in a spot of trouble. So I've got a 488 I bought for 175 grand in January. My life's gone to shit. I need to get rid of it. Fine, I'll take 150. So that's immediately diminished some value. And then I suppose buyers are a little bit more savvy to the fact that the world's in a tough place, so they can try and... Is that right, that the higher end stuff does take a bit more of a hit?
For sure, but the higher end stuff has been not good for about 18 months, mate.
Yeah, I know you've been saying this.
But that's not because of the fact that it's high end. It's because there's too much of it. That's the problem.
Sure.
So if everything's supply and demand in this country, that's why house prices in London are a fortune, because...
Tell me about it.
I'm not sure after this, but in general, everyone wants to live in London, so house prices are expensive. Cars are no different. It's supply and demand. So if you've got a lot of something and not a lot of people that want to buy it, prices go down. Supercars are a big example of that. Now, as you go down the market, and I've done some interesting polls on Twitter and Instagram recently about the way that people think and buy cars. And honestly, the biggest market in the country is 50 grand down. Mm-hmm. We kind of knew that.
Yeah, I'm very aware of that.
We kind of knew that.
It's also where some of the most fun cars lie, I find.
For sure.
Yeah.
And most of them people finance them cars. It's a monthly payment. It's a monthly payment. As long as you've got a half-decent job and you're safe, you know, you're not asking someone to part with 2 or 3 grand a month, which is what a supercar is. You're asking someone to part with £400 a month. Now, the thing is as well, what people don't understand is that you have to have a car. So,
okay, go on.
So you have a car, so you just choose at your price point whether you need a car, you spend £200 a month.
Sure.
Or you buy a car that you want.
Sure.
And you spend £400 a month. So that market will always be okay. So the supercar market, I feel, will change further, because you're right, people will be selling cars because their businesses are in trouble or they've lost their job and
people will need to get out of things quickly.
Correct. But that market has not just become bad now, mate. That supercar market has been so competitive and saturated for 18 months, definitely a year, but 18 months, I think.
Yeah, we've talked about it quite a few times actually this year on the podcast, the fact that nowadays, you know, cars don't have that sort of hyperinflation moment of coming out and getting 30, 40, 50 grand over list. Instead, we're actually seeing things like 720Ss and 488s and stuff like that suffering big hits of depreciation pretty quickly, which I guess is how it used to be 10 or 15 years ago. You know, that was always the joke, wasn't it? You'd buy a Ferrari, drive it off the forecourt and lose 50 grand. And there was that weird bubble where instead you drive it off the forecourt and you gained 100 grand. But that has been changing. I think just to pick up on one point there is that I think you're right. There is that need or that necessity for a car today, and especially, you know, given the fact that people, I think, are trying to avoid public transport and sort of be able to isolate and look after themselves in a safe and healthy way. But to sort of flip that, I think, firstly, if you live in a major city, I think there is a big motivation to not have a car. Cost, practicality. I think the fact that councils and governments are trying to push towards, you know, e-mobility or autonomous vehicles, all of these different segments where I think our generations below us, if you're 15 now, 12, 13, 14, 15 now, I don't think you desire a car as much. Petrolheads, sure. But I'm talking about mass population. I think people are like, no, screw it. I can just take a e-scooter or, you know, jump on the bus, the train. So I think that's changing. And then I think secondly, again, I think the industry over the next 5 to 10 years will make a shift where the ownership of a car won't be such a necessity. I think there's going to be all these different schemes, you know, different leasing or loans or clubs where you can pay £2,000 a month and chop and change cars, or you can walk down the street like Zipcar here in London, where you can sign up to a membership and then you can walk down the street, unlock a car, use it for a couple of hours and dump it back. I think that is going to become more and more common for the everyday person, not the petrolhead enthusiast, but for the everyday person. However, my big thinking is for that to still succeed, those cars do still need to exist. Like, people are not going to stop driving. I just think ownerships of cars, how we own cars, might change. So you know, it's going to be interesting to see, but right now, for sure, there is still a necessity for a car for most households. And somebody made a good point to me the other day, which kind of goes along with what you were saying, is that ages ago, someone told me in a family, women make the car buying decision. Hence why SUVs took a big boom, because traditionally women like a bigger car because it feels safer, it's more practical, easier to load the kids in, et cetera, et cetera. But then somebody else mentioned that when it's the man making the decision, it's all about how you look in a car, or how that car makes you look.
Makes hence, you feel.
Exactly. Hence AMG line, M line, you know, all of these cars, which
S line.
Thank you. Which that's why you're on the podcast, Tony, because I couldn't remember Audi's range.
You meant M Sport and you said M line.
There we go. Whatever. Same beep, different bucket. But yes, essentially making people appear and seem cooler, more rich, you know, all these different ways with actually not having to spend the money. And I think it's an interesting point. And so, yeah, it's an interesting time in the market. I think it's a very interesting time in the market, and we are going to see shifts over the years to come. But over the next 18 months or so, let's wait and see. I think you're right that sub 50K cars are going to still keep changing hands.
The car market, just because of recessions, just like the house market, it just has an adjustment. It doesn't stop.
Yeah,
it's not
that
they're two or three of the biggest markets in the country. They make our economy. That, you know, like
stuff that might suffer, for example, expensive restaurants.
Yeah,
that might suffer, but potentially.
But that I don't think that's because of the recession. That will be because of this virus.
Well, yes. I mean, bigger, wider conversation, I suppose. But I'm just talking about what does get affected in a recession.
Of course.
You know, you say that there's parts of the car market which go into that necessity segment. You know, it's definitely the lower end. But then, you know, the luxury items are what usually get hit, like, you know, expensive meals or big holidays and things like that. Anyway, we got very sort of deep there, didn't we?
I don't even know what we were talking about today, but we're, I mean, we're about 6 minutes in or seven
minutes. Mate, we're 15 minutes in.
Are we?
Yeah, we've really gone really hardcore on the sort of, you know.
Welcome back.
Hello. Are we a fun, entertaining podcast bringing you nice, light-hearted relief whenever you're listening to us? Well, look, let's move on from the quite dark and depressing chat that we just had to some more uplifting, hopefully, topics, because there's been a lot of car news recently, and there is a lot to discuss. First of all, I had a go last week in a Taycan.
Did you?
Yeah. Now, some may remember that earlier in the year, I did have a go in a Taycan in Geneva. It was a 4S, drove it during a sort of photo shoot. But this was a chance to get into a Taycan Turbo, not a Turbo S, but a Turbo, on UK roads. That car is so good.
Yeah, but what? But why would we expect any different?
No, this is the thing. I mean, but because it's still a bit of an unknown. Okay, yes, it is Porsche, but it's electric, and it's electric Porsche, and they could have got it wrong. I mean, yeah. They weren't going to, but they could have.
Yeah.
I would have one in a heartbeat if I had a driveway that I could charge it on.
Yeah. Now, I saw one on the road for the first time the other day.
What colour?
Black.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, what's that noise? And it was the Taycan. Yeah, I mean, it makes a noise.
It makes and also quite a fun, exciting noise.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. I get really hooked on the whole noise element. And when you're driving fast, it for some reason fades away. But around town, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it gives the car real presence. And I say, it's great to drive, really nice. And it's a right size because essentially, it's an alternative to the Panamera, right? You know, it's a four-seater Porsche. But it's a lot smaller and more compact, so it feels more like a 3 Series. I don't actually know the actual dimensions compared to a 3 Series or a 5 Series.
It's probably 5 Series.
Maybe it's more 5 Series. But it feels really nice and shrunk around you and solid and manoeuvrable. But yeah, that's my issue, is I wouldn't be able to live with one right now, which is the frustration. It is expensive, but, you know, a Panamera is expensive.
For sure.
And an M5 is expensive.
Correct.
And, you know, that's kind of where it's rivaling. Yeah. But it's in its own sort of market. How much are Tesla Model S's? They're $100, aren't they, for the proper performance
one? Yeah, they'll be similar money. But, I mean, in your right mind, why would you buy one of them over the Porsche?
Do you remember ages ago we did a video on the Model X?
Yeah, we did, yeah. I mean, apart from the fact we nearly died because someone drove us off the back of a cliff nearly. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't very kind about that car. And you tried to convince me. And in the end, you get, actually, you're right.
Yeah. Well, because I was trying to be like, you know, pro EV. Like, yeah, I don't want to be like, you know, have my own opinion. But fundamentally, I thought it was just not good. Like, I just, not good. And I still think that. And, you know, obviously Tesla had the march on everyone. And they got the sort of step ahead and they were the first and blah, blah, blah. But now with people like Porsche and Mercedes, Audi catching up, why would you go to Tesla now?
Well, he's rung the bell, that Elon Musk, as in what he's going to do is Tesla will go belly up in a minute and he will literally just sell batteries.
Yeah, and infrastructure.
And infrastructure.
Fantastic. That's well done.
Unbelievable.
Genius.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, and he's proved the point as well.
But the cars themselves, I've never really been a big fan of.
No.
But yeah, super cool, super nice experience. Now, moving on to that, from that to some wider news, a couple of topics here. Corvette. The American brand. Hello.
Okay.
Chevrolet Corvette right up your street.
No. I mean, they're just going a straight line. And they're not even that fast.
Well, hold on a sec, though, because this is the new mid-engined C8 Corvette. It's coming to the UK.
So this is the European designed?
I don't know.
It still won't go around corners. No.
It's mid-engine. It's going to have good handling. It's, it's supposed to be a Ferrari rival.
Oh, God.
It's 6.2-litre V8.
Good.
500 odd horsepower, 500 and something newton meters of torque. So, you know, not stupid numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Big hunking V8.
Good.
What do you think it's going to cost here in the UK?
Well, I mean, in America, they're pennies normally.
Yeah, that's the thing about them. They're super affordable in the US.
They are, yeah. 80 grand.
Oh, my God. You're quite good at your job.
80 grand.
81 grand. Oh, it shouldn't knock you so much so often.
No, you shouldn't, no.
What do you think about that?
I haven't got any thoughts on even how it's coming.
Well, it's interesting. So it's essentially a grand less than your entry-level 992 Porsche.
By the Porsche.
Substantially less than an AMG GT.
By the Merc.
And well, I don't want to go into Vantage, but yeah.
By the Corvette.
Oh, God. I think it's an interesting proposition. I think the car, I still think, looks a bit fugly. But obviously, we know Archie Hamilton had a Corvette at one point.
We do. Which is why they haven't sold any more.
Didn't go so well. But I think they're kind of cool cars. And I think to have that huge hunking V8 and it's something different, something alternative, I still think that's quite good money. I mean, it's a lot of money, but I still think that's quite good.
That market, though, mate, is so saturated. And the problem is that Porsche have sewn it up. As in, why would you buy anything else?
That's but would you have... Because that's... Isn't the C8 better... Not better, but it's a different proposition to a 911.
It is, but if you want an everyday sports car, it's like Alpine. They tried to build a sports car to compete with the Cayman. I mean, they're about to go out of business.
No, well, yeah, but I disagree. I don't think they... I mean, they did build a sports car which competed with Cayman, but I think it was a very different prospect. It was a super lightweight, harking back to an old school time and era. And yes, it competed with Cayman because that was what most was obvious at price point,
for sure,
setup and things.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the C8, you can't compare it with a 992 on AMG GT, etc., because it's basically a baby supercar. At 81 grand, you're getting supercar looks, supercar-ish performance. Okay, maybe not that much supercar performance, but it's different. It's alternative. People are going to go, oh, wow, what's that? It's going to sound like... And I therefore think it's a bit of a steal at 81 grand.
Yeah, but it's got to be. As well, okay, take the 911 out of it then, and let's put it up against
an R8,
what we'd call affordable supercars, 570S R8.
Yeah,
you'd still, I don't know about the McLaren, but you'd still buy the R8.
Yeah, that's over so hard. I'd take the McLaren still.
Really?
Out of those three. I would.
I mean, I'd probably rather get a bus pass.
No, you wouldn't.
No, I'd have the R8. I'd have the R8.
Oh, hold on a second.
I'd have the R8.
You had both. 570S and R8
in
your
R8.
No, come on. At one point, prior to us really falling out with McLaren, you loved that car. In fact, we both took our cars to Scotland and proclaimed that they were both the best cars on that trip.
On that, at that point, yeah.
Sure.
But that was the only real time that I only got the McLaren when you were absolutely on it. And your hair was on fire. I mean, we haven't got any hair, no. but that's why. but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
that was the only time you got it. Like, but the R8's a better car, mate.
See, I would still have 570S over R8.
A V10 plus.
Yeah, if push came to shove, I'd still pick 570S.
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't,
no
would
way.
You?
Absolutely not.
And we could have 600LT for the same money, but anyway.
or less.
Yeah. So true. But I'm intrigued by the C8 Corvette. I definitely want to have a go in one when they turn up. And I think it's cool. I think it's well-priced in the sense that you're right. They needed to have a reason why you would buy it over an R8, a 570S, which is good, I think. And that's the right choice. And I think people will go out and buy it at that money because it's different and because it's alternative. I still think they'll struggle to sell it in general, though. Because I think, like me, most people will go, oh, it's a bit plasticky and a bit weird. And
they won't in America, which is the market for. I mean, they'll sell
oh, they fly.
Millions.
Yeah,
obviously,
I think every YouTuber in the world's got a C8 Corvette in America.
Of course, yeah. But in... I mean, there's so many. We have a different taste in cars, don't we? In our country, in Europe.
Different desires, different wants and needs from cars. And I don't think the C8 will necessarily take it. But let's hold judgment. Hopefully, I'll get to have a go in one once they arrive here on UK shores. Right-hand drive, by the way. That's not just going to be a left-hand drive import. There's
that's
gonna be
good.
Full right-hand drive car coming on, which I think is good. Now, coming back to sort of European cars, last couple of weeks, we've seen interesting facelifts or new versions for both the E63 and the M5. Both, I guess, due a bit of an upgrade, but probably because RS6 has come along, right? They sort of felt, oh, we need to...
Oh, I think they're taking the piss, me.
Really?
Honestly, mate, especially the M5. I mean, the M5 competition only came out last year.
I know, they've literally given it new headlights.
I mean, and they give it new headlights and give it the same screens as the M8.
Yeah, I have to say, the M5 one, I agree. But I feel like they did that, as I say, because Merck were coming with E63, Audi had RS6, they're like, oh, we probably need to update this. I mean, one car that really didn't need an update. But this is a BMW thing, I think, at the moment. Did you not see X6 came out with some new rear tail lights? They're like, it's a whole new car!
Yeah. To be fair to BMW, they're back.
Oh, I'm loving BMW at the moment. As an entire brand, I am all over the BMW vibe.
Yeah, and do you know what? Out of the three cars, and I'm in a new RS6 at the moment, by the way.
You're in one today?
Yeah.
No way!
Yeah, just one's come into stock. So
I want to come and look at that.
I would have the M5 out of the three, out of the Merc, the RS6, and I'd have the M5. The M5, I think, is the best car, mate.
I would agree. I drove one in Bulgaria last year for a few days and thought it was unbelievable. In
if
the sense,
done an estate of that.
Oh my God, if they'd done an estate of that. Yeah. I would have robbed a bank.
Yeah.
Because it's five different cars in one.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And then you've got all of this new tech. And that's the thing for me, BMW are killing it at the moment with a car to live with.
Yep.
Your usability factor, technology, safety. I like the design, okay, 4 Series aside, and we did touch on that briefly when I came to see you
we'll
for the main channel video. But yeah, you know what? The M Sport cars aren't looking so bad on the new 4 Series.
Yeah.
But yeah, just in general, I think Audi seemed to have slightly softened off a bit. They were super hot a few years ago, and I feel like things have just cooled off. That RS6 does catch my eye. I've seen a few of them around town, and I do go, ooh, because it's huge.
It's huge, and it's really menacing.
Huge and so menacing, but I get the impression it's a little bit boring to drive.
Yeah, so it is, you're bang on, it's very boring to drive, it's very numb. It looks the best of the three, because the E63 and the M5, unless you look hard... They look like E-classes and 5 Series.
Yeah. Could so be your Uber.
Yes, yeah. But you know, they're 100 grand cars, you know, and same. They're all the same money, by the way, they're all similar money list. But... The best car to drive and I think to be in is definitely the M5.
Maybe, yeah, possibly. Well, yeah, so RS6, you know, a bit soft. And then when we go to the E63, obviously I haven't driven one for a while, but I did drive the wagon, the old E63. They do an S, don't they? Am I going mad? Yeah, E63 S wagon. And again, it was big and it was sort of funny, as in it was so aggressive, quite harsh on the ride, super loud, just like bullet train. But not necessarily a car I wanted to live with every day.
Yeah,
I still hate the Mercedes infotainment system because that ride was a bit harsh. And it's a bit of a shouty AMG car. Whilst to come back and hark on about BMW, that's why the M5 is so great, is you can just dial it all out and be a minicab.
Yeah.
Or turn up 10 and destroy most supercars that you come across on the road. So it's winner, chicken dinner. The only thing, as you mentioned, is that of all of them, the M5 is the only one you can't get in an estate. RS6 estate only. And then E63, I'm assuming there's going to be a wagon facelift
both,
as well.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. Definitely that'll be a super intriguing head-to-head just to see all three of them together.
If you look at trends with Audi, BMW, Mercedes, what tends to happen is they all have runs.
Yeah.
So Audi had a run a few years ago where everyone went out and bought Audis because were absolutely killing it. Interiors.
Everything looks amazing. Every single car looked identical.
Correct. And then it went Mercedes with all them new interiors, all the new A-classes and the E63s.
You're
and,
so right.
And now it's BMW's
You're
turn.
So true.
That's what happens. And
it's going to be Alfa Romeo
forever.
Next.
No.
I tried my best there. You never know. Come on, Alpha.
No, we do know.
It does just seem to revolve between those
then three.
There was a time when Volvo kind of put their head in the mix. But again, I think people... The thing with Volvo, which I love, is that about 5 years ago when they got their new design language and everything looked amazing, everyone was like, oh my God, Volvo, where have you come from? But now it's fallen behind a bit because they haven't stepped it up again.
Good brand though, Volvo, you know.
Great brand, great cars. Brand. XC40, what a whip.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very loyal customers. They when you buy a Volvo, it's all you ever buy after
that's
then.
It, you're done. Yeah. And I think it says a lot about who you are if you've got a Volvo.
For sure.
You know, you want quality, you want practicality, you want safety.
Yeah.
You don't want a lot of show, but you want something nice.
Yeah.
This is very Swedish. What specs your RS6 that you're in?
Launch edition.
What does that mean? I don't work in the car business.
So they do a base launch.
No, but what colour is it?
Oh, sorry, it's black with black.
Okay.
With a roof with 22s and all the bits and pieces on it. Sports.
Unless you sell it quickly, can I come have a drive?
You can.
Is it very low mileage?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Okay, I'll leave it. Because I only want to have a go one if I can have a go one.
Yeah.
Okay, don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. We'll leave it. Anyway, well, if you're looking for an RS6 on low mileage, launch edition, Tony's got one. But I just intrigued because there was so much hype, internet hype around old generation RS6. And I think there is still today. If you post on Instagram an old RS6 in a nice spec, well, people go nuts.
Yeah.
The new one, I think people were like, ooh, and it does look cool, but it just seems to have just been a bit quiet. Like, you know, there's not a lot of God, I really want a new RS6. And even the reviews, everyone's a bit like,
But there's none of them around. And they're still, I mean, the one that we're going to put up for sale will be nearly list.
Okay.
Like, they haven't dropped any money, really. Fair. They're kind of, because there's none around.
Sure.
And I think the problem I do have with them, well, the problem I have with all of them, actually, is that they're $100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a lot of money.
They're a lot of money, but so many cars are a lot. Like that's just the market, right?
That's
cars. That's where we kind of get to. And actually, something which wasn't on my list today, but I want to come on to very quickly, which we haven't spoken about, is Roma.
Because
I went to see Ferrari Roma, didn't I? A few weeks ago at Dick Lovett, talking about cars that, you know, priced for the market, etc. Oh my God, I fell in love. Now, we've spoken about this car quite a few times on this podcast, and neither of us have been that nice about it. But wow, in the flesh.
Are you going to get one?
I genuinely...
No, really?
I've been thinking, maybe this is my go big or go home moment. Maybe this is what I've been getting wrong on YouTube. Because the thing that, if I'm critical about my channel... Tony's grimacing so much. If I really critical about what I do, is that I never bought into that buying cars for YouTube. Like if you look at all my, I wouldn't call them competitors, but colleagues. Thank you. They've always bought cars because they're going to do well on the channel. You know, they really analyze what cars they're going to buy that are going to, you know, get views. Well, I just gone out and bought the cars I want, and then hopefully people are interested in the storyline. But maybe that's where I fell down a bit, and maybe I should have just sucked it up and bought an RS6.
I don't think you fell down now, mate.
What?
I don't think you fell down there. I think you've made the right decision overall, if I'm honest.
Well,
I think some of your colleagues are in the shit.
Who knows? But Roma, I was like, it's going to be 20, 25 grand deposit now. It's probably going to be like two grand-ish a month. It's a ton of money. And I think I'd have to probably get rid of the Ferrari.
God!
No! I hate you so much. At which point I then think it's not worth it, because that for me, that's a keeper for life car.
Okay, fine.
And at which point for a Roma, which I'm going to buy at 200 and something grand just for YouTube views, which is then going to lose me a ton of money. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's not a business, mate.
So
it's not a thing. Yeah.
If over the next 2 years, my business starts to perform well, eventually, finally, I do really want one. I genuinely really want one when they're 165 grand.
Well, that won't be long. I think there'll be 165 grand when they come out.
Because if you look at Portofino track records, they're never really much over list, if anything, are they? They just kind of come out and start to slowly drop.
Over list is not a thing anymore, mate. Cars are not going to fetch over list
anymore.
That's interesting. It's gone. That's finished.
Yeah, yeah.
There's too many cars.
Okay.
And people that think that the supercar market is going to come back and they're going to go back up again, no. It's gone. It's finished. It's too many.
Okay, so two cars that I want to touch on there to sort of pick apart your point. I'm sort of teasing some content that I don't really want to tease yet, but as we spoke about, I drove a 458 recently.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Good.
Thank you. And I sent you a voice note because I was asking about sort of values, because the car I was driving, I was surprised, was 150 grand. And I was like, how are 458 still so strong? Like, we all think, all know Paul Wallace's story when he went cheap supercar shopping in Dubai and picked up a 458 for ludicrously low money. I assumed 458s were 100 and 110 grand by now. But checking on Auto Trader and speaking to you, no, they're still quite strong. And at the dealership I visited to drive that car, they also had a GT3 RS 991.1. So not the most recent version. And that was like 160 grand. And I checked online and they're still really strong. So those are two cars which I would have expected, especially the 458, to have dropped off quite a lot more. And even the GT3 RS, there's a newer version. So why are they still so strong? Two cars which kind of buck the trend in terms of what you're saying.
Well, the 458, more than the GT3 RS, if I'm honest, because the 458 is an old car, mate.
10 years old?
It's 10 years old. It's an old car. No, it's a Ferrari. The GT3 RS is the money they are because I think they're too cheap at list. So when the market dictates the value. So they are the money they are because they are just too cheap, full stop.
So are they a good bet then?
I think if you can get a Gen 1 GT3 RS at 140, 150, can I sit here and say you won't lose any money? No, I still think you'll lose some money. But buying a GT3 RS, I think your money's as safe in one of them as it is in anything else, mate.
I think if you look at the market in general, that's one of the safest bets you can have, like across the board.
Or I'll tell you another one, a 2 RS.
Well, of course. We're going to come back to that because that's our grand topic for the day, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I cannot wait for this.
So we'll come back to that.
We're going to come back to that.
Let's stick with 3 RS for a second because, you know, if you bought a Gen 1 GT3 RS 991, how many years ago? 5 years ago now?
So at least, if you bought one 5 years ago, they were about specced, they were about 150.
150.
So
you
get your money back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ludicrous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you say, there's not many other cars right now that you could do that with, but theoretically, 458 and 3 RS. So go on, I interrupted you. You were on a flow about 458.
So yeah, I honestly think they're too expensive, personally, and I think if they had a little bit of an adjustment and then they kind of stabled again, but as time goes on, I think they are gonna, because they are 10 years old, mate, and it's 150 grand. I mean, I know that the 488's turbocharged, but I mean, get a 488.
But the 458 is still such a good car.
Like, it was a fundamentally, game changer. It
was a game changer, yeah. But it is still a very, very good car. It's all the supercar performance you need. It is like 500 and odd horsepower on the road, yeah. Like mid-engine, but thank you. Yeah, yeah. And I think people buy into the last naturally aspirated aspect. So people want that. They want a shouty, naturally aspirated Ferrari. Obviously, the service pack helped. You know, some of the later cars, I guess that, you know.
From a 2011, every Ferrari come with a 7-year service pack.
There we go. So that helps with the sort of reassurance. It's usable, blah, 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 blah. And 488 and especially F8 haven't done, or have done the 458 a favour because they've never been looked that favourably on. And I think, you know, media, journalists, even us, well, not us, but, you know, YouTube, have been to blame for that because everyone downplayed the 488. We know that that's a better car in every single way. But most people went, oh, it sounds a bit crap. And oh, it's, you know, it's not as exciting. You know, 458 is better. So I think people are still going out there, looking at the market and going, I want a 458, not a 488. Because actually, coupes now, they're kind of the same money.
There's not a lot in them. And do you know what? The 488 still revs to 8,000 revs, mate.
Oh, and I think it still sounds brilliant.
Yeah, for a turbocharged car, it is turbocharged and you ain't going to have that bark. But let's be honest here as well, being that I've owned both cars, 458, 458 Speciale and
488.
10 488.
Yeah. I think 15 maybe.
Yeah. I don't think the 488 sounds that good. It's just a
no,
loud...
No, 458.
Sorry, the 458 doesn't sound that good.
Agreed.
It's just a loud bark.
Yeah.
The Scud and your car sounds much better
even
than the
488. Even my car. F you.
No, I didn't mean that derogatory.
Even your piece of crap.
No. You know, everyone's... Yeah. One man's junk's another man's junk. But no, it sounds really like the CS yes. and that, and even the normal 360.
Of course,
they've got a really nice tone to them. The 458 is just a bark.
I literally had this conversation with a guy in the supermarket 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Literally, random guy comes up to me, owns an F12. If you're listening, mate, you got a beautiful car. But yeah, and we were having this conversation that 458. It's not the greatest sounding Ferrari. You can make it sound great with an aftermarket exhaust, but from factory, it is just a bit shouty with not a lot of tone. And when I did Speciale versus Pista, I'd spent 3 days in a Pista, got in the Speciale, hoping and assuming it was going to be this absolute symphonic audio experience. And I was a bit like, oh, is that it? Like, because Pista sounds bloody brilliant as well. Like, yeah. It's just different. But I think because so many people made an issue about it and downplayed it, and people thought the 488 was just a lazy update of the 458, and then F8 again is a sort of lazy update of the 488. People are still going, oh, I'd love a 458, and it's kept those values high. And I would be nervous if I was buying a 458 at 150 grand.
Me too.
Because I think maybe at some point the world will wake up and they'll suddenly drop. I would be nervous. But if you look at history of those cars, they just haven't. You said there was a price correction over the last couple of years from sort of 180 to 150. Still not the end of the world. But maybe that's just it. Maybe they're just always going to be a good bet.
And maybe they have found their level. Maybe, you know, you'd think after 10 years they probably have. But I wouldn't go out, maybe because I've already had one, I wouldn't go out knowing now what's available on the market that you can buy that's so much better than a 458. I know that... Listen, the engines are bulletproof, the gearbox, and that's probably another thing as well. They don't go wrong, mate.
The early ones did. They all caught fire, but they fixed but that they, pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. But in terms of a product, as long as you keep them on trickle charge, batteries are a bit cracked, but that's Ferraris in general. Like, they're very good, mate. You know, they don't go wrong.
But I know what you're going to say, because we're going to answer in the same way. If you were going out to spend 150 odd grand and there was a 458 and a 488 parked next to each other, which one are you going to have?
488.
Yeah, same.
Every
single day. It's a better car than every single... And the thing I'd forgotten sitting in the 458, and I'm really like ruining my video because we're basically discussing everything I discussed in my video. But anyway, hopefully you'll still tune into that. It's actually quite small. And for someone my height, 458 is borderline a little bit too compact. Like, I have to slightly lean down unless I'm in the race carbon seats. I'm a little bit too high up in the car. And while 488 is just such a nice cabin and environment, and it feels nice to be in. And okay, yes, it's a little bit too much power. Does like to freaking, you know, spin up its wheels a bit too often, and that's a turbo thing. But yeah, I'd have 488 every day of the week.
Of course. And that, I mean, the 458 was probably the first real full-on supercar that was an everyday supercar from the Italians, essentially.
Yes.
So obviously you had the R8 and the Turbo S, and I mean the Turbo S isn't really a supercar,
no.
Really, but although it goes like one,
super sports car,
super sports car. But yeah, the R8 showed us that a car can be a supercar, can be
a mid-engined, high-performance car,
and then this Ferrari come out that absolutely Troused everything when you look at the 430 as
well. Redefined what a supercar could be.
Redefined, that's right. And then when the 488 come out, it just redefined it again, but tweaked it, and then they put turbochargers and made it even more usable.
Mm-hmm.
And probably because they'd done that, made it less exciting for that reason.
I think the 488's biggest problem was actually the McLaren. Because I think McLaren had come along, and McLaren was so exciting at that point, so new, so different, doing things so well. And when the 488 came along, everyone went, well, it's just a bit slower than what, a 650S it must have been at the time.
They were similar.
Yeah, I think people were like, what? Like, Ferrari should have gone a step further. Like, how have they bought out a car which isn't as good as the McLaren, which has already been out for a year or whatever?
Yeah, but if you talk to Ferrari, they said, well, we'd just build a car. We're not competing.
Well, yeah, anyway. And, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, because look at where the world's ended up. And
correct.
488s versus 650Ss. Anyway, time to move on to the main discussion point of today's podcast, which is something that Tony and I found ourselves discussing a couple of weeks ago on WhatsApp. getting rather heated about, actually. And I think we have had many arguments in the past, but this was our most recent and possibly our strongest. Because, and I don't even know how we got onto it. But
you were
trying
to wind me up, probably.
I think I was trying to wind you up.
It doesn't work.
We were discussing whether a Pista or a GT2 RS is better. And I just want to bring up, I've got a few, because at the time, I was even sending you like screen grabs of like track lap times and performance things.
I know.
So I want to try and bring all that up, because I think it's going to be useful ammunition. But of course,
you're going to need it.
Yeah. As you would suspect, Tony is on the side of Porsche 911 GT2 RS, and I was on the side of Ferrari 488 Pista. And the point here being sort of between what car would we like to have, but actually more importantly, which is the better car? Now, my argument is that Pista is better. It's faster around track. It's more usable. It's more subtle. It holds its money better. And it's got the better badge. So therefore, it is the better car.
I mean, every single one of them arguments or them pinpoints, I've got an argument
before
for.
Before you dispute each point, Tony, why do you think the GT2 RS is a better car?
Because it's just better engineered. It's held its money loads better. It's more usable than a Pista in terms
It's
more practical. The cabin's more simple. The technology is more simple.
No.
Mate, the way it puts its power down is easier to drive.
Let's get into this point by point. Price wise, values. Talk to me. You know this off the top of your head, so I'm going to take your word for it. I'm not going to question you, but don't lie to me. So GT2 RS, what are you expected to pay today on the used market?
For a free 4,000 mile, roughly GT2 RS, around 320, 330.
And what retail. Were they list?
Tops 260.
260 list and around 330, 340. So you're nearly 100K in profit still. Mid 300s.
And you've done 4,000 or 5,000 miles, essentially.
Sure.
This is retail to retail,
yeah,
though, so this is not
course.
Trade.
Because yeah, we're not being specific. This is just vague overview.
For sure, yeah.
Pista. What would you pay today for an equivalent mileage, condition, etc. Pista? 300.
Less.
No.
Yeah, listen.
Because I'm trusting you here.
No. There are delivery mileage Pistas for sale at 299.
No, there are not.
Okay.
Really?
On Auto Trader? Yes, mate.
I do want to go on Auto Trader. That surprises me, because what were they list? Do you remember? Actually, I think you know, don't you?
Of course I know. So a unspecced Pista.
Yeah.
As in before extras was about 252 or 254 grand, roughly. By most people put 50 grand worth of extras on them, so they were 300 and a bit more.
Okay.
Some of the real high-spec ones were like 330, 340.
So in a classic way, a Porsche, you're still getting a chance to make money because it's probably an undervalued product from list. Ferrari, you've got a good chance of maybe breaking even, depending on if you've used it or not. There is a car for 299, but it's left-hand drive, so we're not counting it. The cheapest right-hand drive car is 309,000 with 2,000 miles on the clock.
It's not.
It is. I'm on Auto Trader right now.
Okay.
Lowest car, 299,995, left-hand drive.
It's a right-hand drive. There's more than one.
The next car is 309,000. Stop shaking your head like you know better than me. I'm literally looking at the website right now. The cheapest car, there's a handful of cars under 310, all with quite low mileage. So I will admit they are slightly more affordable, but I'm now also going to look at what the cheapest 2RS is, because I actually now don't trust you.
So I'm right. The 299 ones must have gone because they were there the other day.
Oh, yeah, okay. They were there the other day. Come on. But fine. I will hand it to you that the 2RSs arguably hold them. Well, not hold their money, but yeah, you're better off on the money side of things. The cheapest 2RS is 324,000.
Only if you've bought them both list, by the way. And even if you're buying them over list, you still buy the Porsche because the market dictates what they're worth after 3 years, and the Pista's only going to go down. By what the market says, the Pista's only going to go down. The GT2 RS would you think is probably stable because it's been out 3 years now.
But I'm going to say I'm going to say with the Pista that's got the same problem that the 488 versus 458 that we just discussed. So I think there is a bit of an image problem with Pista. So that's all I'm going to say. So fine, value I concede. In top trumps, you have got point number one. Okay. Point number two you made, it's easier to live with. It's more practical. It's more usable. Totally disagree. And here's why. Firstly, the GT2 RS looks like you've driven through Halfords the wrong way. It is way too in your face. Way too, that massive wing is stupid and ridiculous. You have a smaller front boot because it's got that stupid system, four-wheel drive, whatever, the front wheel, you know, the gearbox at the front. So you've got the smaller boot for the 911.
And then it's not smaller.
It is smaller. It is smaller. If you get a GT3 RS and a GT2 RS front boot, GT2 RS is smaller.
Okay.
Trust. And it's definitely smaller than the Pistas. 1,000,000%, because the Pista's got a huge front boot.
Okay.
Behind your bloody seats, you've got that stupid roll cage. You can't really put anything back there. Okay, fine, you can't put anything behind your seats in the Pista.
Well, you can.
Well, you can if you really shove it, but it's hard to reach through. Pista, you've got that lovely shelf and then a lovely window showing you your engine.
Okay.
Also, Pista, it's a more compliant car on the road. It just is. Bumpy road mode. The suspension is a little bit softer, a little bit more compliant, therefore making it easier to use and live with. That is the truth. The 2RS is a track car. It is. It is a track car.
But it's not as stiff as a 3RS. It's softer than a 3RS.
Fine. 3RS is borderline unbearable. But I think you have to concede the Pista is a more usable car. As a man who's had 52 488s and one GT3 RS.
But I've had lots of Porsches, mate.
Fine, but you haven't had a GT2 RS.
I haven't had a 2 RS yet.
You know how usable the 488 is. You know how good a car it is to live with. You know what it's like to take on a trip.
But we're not talking about a 488. We're talking about a Pista.
Fine, but it's essentially the same car.
And we're comparing it to a GT2 RS. And I think if we had a bag of cloves and suitcases and stuff...
Yeah.
You'd get more in a 2RS than you would in a Pista, boot and back.
Fine.
So it's more practical.
Well, no. You're saying you can fit more luggage in it.
You fit more luggage, so it's more practical.
But you've got to reach through. Firstly, you've got those stupid fixed bucket seats, the most uncomfortable seats to get in and out of day to day ever. Ferrari carbon racing seats, you could fall asleep in there, so comfortable. Another good plus point for the practicality.
The Porsche seats are nice when you're in. They're just a pain in the ass getting in and out. But
and
once you're in, they're nice.
If you're putting stuff behind the seats through the roll cage, to get to the back, to get your bags in and out, is horrific because you've got to negotiate those horrible little fixed carbon seats that are going to break every single bone in your body. You've got to reach through a bloody scaffolding, pull the bag out, yank it through, bash your passenger on the head. The whole thing's a performance.
Tell your passenger to get out. and as well, another thing, if you're really that bothered about luggage, buy the state car.
No.
We're talking about...
No, but practicality is one of the points on our top trumps
correct.
List. And Pista is more practical. You need to concede this point.
I think they're the same. No, because I know what's going to happen here. You're going to get me to concede a couple and that's how you're going to win.
Okay.
I'm not having it.
Can we call it evens? Will you accept evens?
Evens.
Okay, so 1 point each. You are now leading 2-1.
Evens.
Your next point was that the GT2 RS, the sort of layout, the button, the infotainment system was better or less cluttered or...
So much more less complicated.
No. 991 Porsches have so many buttons. It's like a Boeing 747, and this is coming from a man who owns one and likes one and prefers it to the new 992. But 991s, there's buttons for everything, everywhere, all stripped out, every single place you could imagine. And when you're driving, you've got to find a button for this and blah 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 blah. Nightmare. Absolute nightmare. Whilst the Ferrari, lovely Manettino, driving modes, done. Everything's on your steering wheel, indicators, bish, bash, bosh.
Which is a pain in the ass.
No.
Why can't you just have a stalk?
Why do you need anything else? At that point, you're done. You're driving, you're set, you're off. It's
so
not endless, but it's such a clean, designed
it's
interior.
It's not clean.
It's so... There's nothing in it. That's my way, it's empty.
Mate, you've got a stupid little screen there that you can't even see.
Fair.
And you can't... You can't look at the sat-nav and listen to the radio because it's all wrong. And then you've got your Mal and Tilo stuff here that doesn't make any sense at all. It's crap.
No,
and then
it's
you've got
not.
A camera that you've got a rear camera that even me with glasses, I can't see it.
But this is the charm of the car. This is the charm of it. And it's
we're not talking about charm. You've just slated the way the GT2 RS looks.
It's
practicality.
It's simplified. It's a simplified interior. You said
it's fussy.
No, the 2RS is, but there's too much going on. There's too many on that huge center console with all those buttons.
There's
on
not
this.
All them buttons
there
on it.
Are even the air conditioning system doesn't make sense.
You've got stars on or off.
You've got lovely simple dials on the booster.
I mean, mate, honestly, if you listen to yourself,
no,
the air conditioning is on or off.
If you saw a picture of the two, you would go that the GT2RS
I own a three, they're the same. They are the same. You press one button for radio, you press one button for sat nav, you press one button for phone.
No.
You have a layout.
If you want
you
radio
camera,
to media, there's all those strip of buttons.
There's four buttons.
Too many.
I mean, there's
Ferrari, one.
There's about 10 buttons on that stupid thing, and then you have to flick across. And I mean, it's a disaster.
Well, we're going to have to agree to disagree. No points are awarded in this game. You still lead 2-1. Now we come on to the most important thing. Speed. Performance. So, just as my point, these were the two stats that I sent across to Tony to prove that the Pista was faster. Firstly, of course, the ultimate test of all, Top Gear test track lap times. Ferrari 488 Pista, number two of all time.
Which is not a racetrack. It's not a racetrack.
How most of the public judged the cars.
Most of the public hasn't even been in these cars.
1 minute 12.7, 488 Pista, number two overall. Number five on the list, 992 GT2 RS.
Were they done on the same day, mate?
Yep. 113. I don't know what days they were done.
So it's not 113.4,
nearly a second slower. Okay,
it's not a fair comparison.
Same driver, same track.
How do you know it's the same drivers? There's lots of different
sticks.
There's more than one.
The stick's one person.
No.
So that was my first piece.
It's not a fair comparison.
Fact. Okay, on paper here, piece two is quicker. Second thing I sent you. Now, this is very interesting, and forgive us because there's a little bit of information to get through here. And I'll see if anyone else picks up on this whilst I do. Anglesey Circuit, a circuit that you like.
Very good.
Very good. Very accurate for testing cars. 488 Pista, 110.8, 2RS, 112, over a second slower.
Where's that information from?
This is from actual test track.
It's
lap
from
times.
Evo, isn't it?
No, lap time.
It's from Evo,
thank you.
So again, different days, different conditions, probably different drivers.
Stop making excuses.
No.
Manicor in France, 488 Pista, 144.9, 2RS, 147.
These are not fair comparisons.
Proof again, quicker. Moving on. I don't want to read that one because the 2RS one. Hockenheim GP circuit. Ferrari 488 Pista, 145.9, 2RS, 149.1. Nearly 4 seconds slower, mate.
That's probably
read
it
and
a wet,
weep.
It's probably a wet time.
What do you think the NCM Motorsport Park is?
I don't care.
Well, you should care because the 2RS was quicker there, 124.2 compared to the Pista at 127.3. But it was probably raining when the Pista did it, so let's ignore that.
I mean, these are flawed arguments.
Auto car dry handling. Pista, 105.3. 2RS, 107.8. Slower again, my friend. Varano. This one, the 2RS won, but by a smidgen. 108.2 compared to Pista, 109.4. Top Gear test track, we've just done. Auto car wet handling. So this is on a wet session. 2RS trounced the Pista, but of course, four-wheel drive.
It's rear-wheel drive.
That's embarrassing.
I mean, it's really embarrassing.
That's embarrassing.
Do you know why the Porsche is always faster in the wet?
Let's skip
where
that.
The engine is.
Let's
they get all the power down because they're better.
Let's skip the fact that I talked about the four-wheel drive 2RS, which obviously has never been made. Moving on briefly, Sam. I might edit
the
that
boot
out.
The boot's smaller because it's four-wheel drive. Oh, yeah.
Why did I think the 2RS was four-wheel drive? That's really bad. That's awful. I genuinely thought the 2RS was four-wheel drive. I should just retire now and go home, shouldn't I? But I do even feel like it's got something in the front gear. Front isn't the 2R. I'm going to Google that.
No,
there is something about the 2RS having a smaller front boot. There is. It's got something in there which makes it smaller.
Okay,
definitely does.
It's not forward drive.
It's definitely not forward drive system.
I mean, I didn't pick up on that the first time you said it.
God, I wish you hadn't. Oh, thank God. Well, thank God you picked up on it now, because other people would have. And I really would have had to quit this podcast. Sorry, everyone. It's been a while. Nürburgring Nordschleife. Fine, 2RS trounces it, 6 minute 47 compared to 7 minutes. Now, has anyone else picked up on something which I didn't pick up on when I sent this to Tony as my proof for the Pista being faster? Have you picked up on anything?
No.
They're even Stevens. When you go through it, it's like five apiece. There's nothing in it. Like, it's five apiece, so it's five all. Okay. So this was my like, Pista's so much faster. Actually, they're pretty even.
They will be pretty even, and I've seen them and been in... driven them both on track, and they are pretty even for one or two laps.
Yeah.
But because of the way the Porsche is engineered,
mm-hmm.
if you went out in them for 20 minutes, the Porsche would have gone down the road, mate.
Right.
Because the Ferrari suffers from terrible understeer and also terrible brake fade. Ask any Pista owner that's been on track. I mean, they just go straight, mate. Porsche doesn't have that because it's engineered properly because of his motorsport.
Really?
Honestly, mate. Honestly, from what I've seen, and I've seen it with my own eyes. Even ask Ollie Webb what he thinks.
Even ask Ollie Webb.
I mean, he's not even a racer driver. He's an Instagrammer. No, but he's driven both back to back. Yeah. And he's driven them both back to back. And he will say that the 2RS is a better car. It just is.
The thing is, I haven't driven both back to back, and I definitely haven't driven both on track. It surprises me slightly that you're saying there's brake fade on the Pista.
Not straight away.
Fine. But one thing which I think often gets applauded are the brakes, the carbons on Ferraris. So it does surprise me slightly, but fine. The thing that I'm just doing, because I've been researching it, the thing in the GT2 RS front boot that I was thinking of, I'm trying to work out what it is. There's like a black box with a fuel. Is it oil? There's something in there. Look, I'm going to show you a picture if I can turn my laptop around. You'll know what I mean when I show it to you. And I knew there was something in there. Look, that black strut on the front, on the right there, on the picture on the right. On the picture on the right. On the right, the big picture on the right. Yeah, look, at the bottom. No, you see what I mean?
That's for the, like a strut, like a, for handling. Because it's heavier than the, so it probably keeps the weight of the front down. Probably keeps the front down.
Yeah.
Someone tell us.
Someone tell us there's something.
Porsche.
Oh, refilling the tank, which is mounted in the front trunk.
Is it something to do with keeping it cool with the turbo, like the injection?
Yeah, something
thing.
Like that. Yeah, here we go.
The water injection or something.
The water sprayed system. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
If it does run dry, the engine management, blah, blah, blah. Refilling the tank, which is mounted in the trunk. There we go. I knew there was something in the trunk of the GT2RS making it smaller.
But they've also done that for weight as well, by the way, because it keeps the front of the car down.
Of course. Okay, fine. I admit, it's not a four-wheel drive system, and that's still really embarrassing that I thought the 2RS was four-wheel drive. But I wasn't... There was,
okay,
I
so knew, the boot is bigger on the Pista, but actually get in space, you'd get more luggage in a 2RS than you would in a Pista, because you've got the back. Although it's a pain in the ass to get it in and out, you have got more room.
So, long story short,
I've won.
I think you have. By 1 point.
Okay, fair.
By 1 point, which you
they
know,
are it, close it, to
which
be
is
fair.
Value. And they are close. And the thing was, I unfortunately have to concede that overall, I think the 2RS won, because we did run a poll on Twitter after having our argument, and I was shocked by the fact that most people went for 2RS. Even Chris Harris agreed with you.
And he hates me.
Mate, I hate you. So I'm totally on his side in most things, if I'm honest. So yes, I think I will concede that most people think the 2RS is better. But in my mind, I would pick the Pista every time.
But that's your personal opinion, and that's fair.
Fine.
That's fair. But I would pick the Porsche because of my specifics for having a car.
And so you can drive on track because you're a racing driver. No,
well, I'm far from that. but yes, it fits my requirements for what okay. I want.
Well, look, that brings an end to today's episode. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. It's been good to be back in the same room, back recording these for regular sure. weekly episodes. We are still sort of figuring out our new schedules, our post-COVID lockdown schedules, as when we can record and pump episodes out. But we're hoping to do it on a weekly basis. Please do let us know, as I say, about that Patreon, what you would want back if you were donating money to the podcast each week, what you would want. Would you want to be able to dial in? Would you want merchandise? Would you want Instagram DM chats? Whatever it could be, just submit your ideas, your suggestions. We'd just like to know. If not, we will keep doing this for as long as it takes before it starts making us money.
Yeah.
Because we enjoy it, we have a good time. So
we don't do it for the money. We're not doing it for the money.
We're not, but no. It would just be nice if there was some.
It's always been nice if there was some, but yeah, we do it because we like it, right?
Exactly. It's probably the bit of content I like producing the most.
And we're giving a bit back. Well, it's not a lot, but no. Something.
We seem to
Sam thought the GT2 RS was four-wheel drive.
We never claim to be a knowledgeable podcast.
Well, you don't.
Just an entertaining one, hopefully. Anyway, so yes, if you have enjoyed the video, give it a thumbs up. Make sure you stay subscribed if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're listening to us, make sure to keep following on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. Catch up with you soon. Bye-bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.